Hey, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
How are you doing, Carrie? It's
good. Great. I would have kept listening to that entire song.
I know it. The great Tom Petty, who's coming to CMEC
this summer. And it's a perfect segue because Paul, the show before us, he was...
Yeah.
We walked into like all these
up,
songs
smoke
about
it up
weed.
Weekend. This is what... And then this whole conversation with me and Carrie about the whole... You know, marijuana thing, and it's interesting because I know that Governor Cuomo, I don't know if you know that, this week,
talked about
you know, doing not having for small amounts of marijuana, not prosecuting it or not
arresting decriminalizing it.
marijuana. And as you know, we're Sober Life Radio, and we don't take a stance one way or another. I guess we just have different opinions. I have an opinion and Carrie has an opinion. And, but it's an interesting thing to discuss because over the years, I've taken different views on it. I mean, obviously, Tom Petty is an old pothead, but he still is. I don't think he's an old, I'm an old pothead, but he's a current pothead.
Yeah.
But I always look at marijuana differently. Well, I look at the whole THC thing differently because I think, you know, I always believe there is good and bad to almost everything, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's different views. I remember talking to a physician a long time ago, and I won't mention her name because I'm not sure if she wants her opinion on the air, but she might. And talked about how THC, if it was used properly for like different things like anxiety and depression, whatever, that it would actually, that maybe addicts, and this is a weird way to say this, that addicts along the way would be better served than every other medication that we try to put them on.
Yeah. See, my whole thing with it, all right, if you're talking about just like straight smoking marijuana, like smoking weed, a bowl, a joint, a blunt, whatever.
Right.
That is, for me anyways, if I was going to start smoking weed, at some point it wouldn't be enough for me.
Right.
I'd be like, well, if I'm smoking weed, then I may as well drink. And if I'm going to drink, then I may as well do some coke if it's offered
right
to me. And if I'm going to do some coke, then I may as well use some heroin to calm down. So that's talking strictly like just straight smoking it. But then you get into the whole like therapeutic value of THC and CBD.
Right.
Now, the CBD I can get behind. The CBD oil, that's the chemical compound that has the therapeutic value that helps with the anxiety,
right,
that helps with the epilepsy. But what kills me is when I see people that aren't very knowledgeable when it comes to this. And they're saying, oh, you know, weed should be legal. You know, those poor kids with epilepsy and people
right
with anxiety.
They're not smoking
it's not
a joint. Those
smoking
kids
a
with
joint
right
that's helping those kids with epilepsy. It's the CBD. Now, in New York, the way it is now, when it comes to the medicinal marijuana, you're talking about low-level THC, high-level CBD.
Correct.
And that I can get behind and understand and support. But it's just the whole, you know, when people are like, oh, it's just, you know, it's helpful when you just smoke it. And maybe for some.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, and this is the presentation. Okay, so let's talk about this. When we talked about having, if you ever go to California, there's tons of these marijuana clinics.
Oh yeah.
Now when I think of a clinic, I'm thinking you're gonna go, it's gonna smell like a doctor's office. They're gonna give you a little THC in your tongue, right? It's not. It's these big comfy chairs. There's Jimi Hendrix blowing out the speakers.
Right, right.
I mean it's like a real cool environment and these guys are just getting toasted to help their right.
Right.
So I think of the present, like, okay, so let's say if it this way, because you said, well, if I had marijuana, if I was using marijuana, is it the presentation of it? So if you went to like a doctor's office and they gave it to you like a medicine, would it be the same effect unless you went over back to your
right
home, cranked up your stereo and
if
ate
I was
chips?
It would depend on how I was consuming it. Like if I was given THC in a doctor's office and still had the effect of being high, for me, it would feel like the same thing because
okay
that wasn't my drug of choice per se, but I'd be like, well, I want more.
Right.
But if it was like the CBD or like something where I didn't have an effect from it, but it helped with the anxiety or if I had epilepsy, helped with seizures, you know, I think that's where I'm getting at is the difference between the therapeutic value of some of the chemicals versus smoking and getting high and it helping.
Right. It's the same thing if you take a antidepressant or anti-anxiety med, it doesn't
right
get you high. It actually just removes the anxiety.
Right.
So that's what you're saying. So if it was something that you would take and then it would just remove it, not get you.
But on the other side, I do believe that it's less harmful than prescription pain medication.
Yes.
And I will never judge. I mean, I have friends, I have former clients that smoke marijuana.
Right. Marijuana.
They haven't done heroin in years.
Yeah, marijuana maintenance.
Yeah.
We used to call
it.
So
I will never judge. Again, our thing is whatever works for you, whatever improves your quality of life.
Sure.
Harm reduction is what they call it.
Yeah.
You know, sure.
Because I think there's a big, there's this whole misconception that addiction itself has to do with drugs and alcohol. Really doesn't. No. Because addiction, that's just one symptom of a lot of things. To really develop your quality of life. That's why I hate when people go into treatment centers and, you know, they always want to work. And I go back and forth on this, but like they always say, Joel, don't give me a non-recovering counselor. And I'll say, why? And they'll say, well, because, you know, they don't know. Well, it's like, well, if I go in for heart surgery, I don't go in the waiting room trying to find somebody that has another heart problem to service me, because there's nothing to do about that. Right. They're able to give you quality of life too. I mean, don't just put like a barrier up that they can't help you.
I always say that one of my best counselors that I ever had years ago was a person that was not in recovery.
Sure.
And I will stand by that to this day. She's one of the best counselors I ever had.
Well, it's so funny. I used to do this class where I would list the 10 top addiction counselors in the world. Mm-hmm. And I talk about Virginia Satir. I talk about Father Martin. They say, Father Martin? Oh, my God, I love his tapes. Well, he wasn't in recovery.
Yeah.
Talk about Tony Robbins, the motivational guy that actually has helped millions of people in addiction, not in recovery.
Right.
It has nothing to do about that. They talk about quality of life.
Yeah. Well, and maybe these are the people that you want to listen to and learn from, because they're the people that, for whatever reason, did not struggle with addiction, and they were living a way of life that was... I don't want to say prevented, but I'll say that for lack of a better word, it prevented them from succumbing to addiction.
Right. Everybody has struggles, and it doesn't. Yeah. Please don't ever. If you're in treatment right now, don't think you have to have the person that's in recovery to help you, because you're closing off to some really wonderful people that are really out there.
There's pros and cons to everything. Right. That's the thing. There is no right way. There's no right way for anything. There's no right way to get clean and sober. There's no right way to just get off of heroin. There's just no right way.
Right. And speaking of treatment, we talked about that. We were talking about that in the green room today. That it's very interesting, because Carrie and I are in the business, and there's some sad things going on. This is what happens. No one, because it's stuff that's not talked about, because it's so under the wire.
Mm-hmm.
But like over the last few weeks, treatment centers have seen a drop in people being admitted for heroin. And everybody's thinking, oh, my God, we solved it. Look what's happening. There's like this. We're getting people that are more straight alcoholics or marijuana users and stuff. I'm thinking, no, they're dying. Because I had a friend of mine who said, Joel, it's going to work itself out. What she meant was it's going to kill people off. We had so many deaths this year of chronic heroin, you know, from overdoses, that the chronic users are dying off. They're not getting into treatment.
Right.
So this is a sad thing.
Yeah.
We were mobbed. We couldn't keep up. But little by little, I started, you know, you start finding out that people are dying. Yeah. A person we're in contact with actually died recently. And that's how tragic this has become.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, because we want to talk about the state of New York. Okay, it's so funny, because this is what happens. Government always comes in when the problem starts ending. So billions and billions and billions of dollars now have been spent to treat the opiate addiction and the opiate epidemic. And let me tell you something, they're dying before you get to them. And it's horrible.
I always say this, and I feel bad for so many people, and sometimes I don't comment on things out of respect for families that have lost a loved one to to overdose. You know, everyone wants a solution. They want an answer. And I say a lot of times, it's going to run its course. It's running its course right now.
Right.
You know, this problem started years and years and years ago, and it has boiled over into what we're seeing now, and it's going to run its course.
Yeah.
And hopefully the next generation will not have the opiate epidemic
right.
that we have now.
Yeah, because
I hate to say that. But
well, because hopefully, hopefully people are actually looking at what started this. They're looking at a lot of issues. It's interesting because I look at my two young daughters who's in school, and both went to the D.A.R.E. program. Mm-hmm. Isn't that funny? And everyone used to make fun of the D.A.R.E. program.
D.A.R.E. program made me want to do drugs, actually.
Right, but okay. But these two kids are so anti-drug anything that, because that's what they see now. The schools are constantly, in every class, in anything, talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
It's... If this is, and it's good, because I always wonder, someday we're going to have a society where you're not going to have these issues. And I'm just starting to see that now. When I was 13, I just wanted to go get high. I have a 13-year-old girl. She hates when people she sees them smoking. I mean, it's like.
Oh, see, I wouldn't even take a Tylenol when I was a preteen.
Oh.
I was very anti-drug. I was sports, very anti-drug, wouldn't even take a Tylenol. When I was constantly upset with my father for smoking cigarettes.
Well,
and then
my
peer group really influenced me.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it sounds like such a downer when we're talking about it running its course and these people dying and us actually having beds in treatment centers. I mean,
that's
major
insane.
Treatment centers that have beds. And this is not to say that there's no hope and that we need to stop fighting.
No,
there is hope. We need to keep fighting, even
right.
if we save one person.
Right.
I shouldn't say even if we save one person, because we can't save anybody. No one can save anyone else. You need to save yourself.
Right.
And I'm very adamant about that. You need to save yourself.
Yeah.
You can have support. You can have help. But there is hope.
Yeah, there is hope. And that's what it is. So we can't. Yeah. And I'm not saying we should stop fighting. But I think this is something that people have to pay attention to. Because because no one will know. Sooner or later, this will just go away.
Yeah.
And people are actually going to think, wow, we solved the problem. No, we didn't.
They all died.
They died.
It's
they didn't.
Terrible.
We didn't solve the problem. They died, and that's terrible about it.
But it just blows my mind because we both kind of had this aha moment in the green room, where a major agency that Joel's aware of, they have open beds. Another major agency in Rochester, inpatient treatment center, they have open beds. The level, what I do for a living, I do assessments,
right,
and I approve and treatment.
Yes.
For people, you know, give the go-ahead for community residents, inpatient, whatnot. Yesterday alone, I got several requests for individuals to go to congregate care level 2, which is halfway houses,
halfway
community
houses.
Residences, for cannabis use disorder diagnosis, their primary diagnosis.
Yeah.
Like, I had 3 yesterday, and that was unusual.
That's
like, so there's
insane.
Open beds in halfway houses.
That's literally insane. Right.
Yeah, and it wasn't for the opiate addicts.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not like it just went away, but you're right. But then we look at the obituaries, wow, look at all these people that have died recently that have, you know, that overdosed on heroin. And it's not even heroin.
Well, anything. And sometimes it's not even the substance itself. It's the lifestyle.
Sure.
I mean, there was somebody not too long ago that died in a tragic way because of the lifestyle, not the substance itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Know? But it's fentanyl. It's all kinds of things right now that are killing people off. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, that's terrible. Let's talk about something great.
Well, our guest today.
Oh, yeah.
I should have mentioned it in the very beginning.
Which we discussed.
I know, but we were on a roll. Our guest today is going to be Austin Cooper. He is the founder and life coach at Sober Evolution. I follow him on social media, and I'm actually really interested and excited to be talking to him in a few minutes.
That's going to be good. That is great. And that's we are talking about so many people that are so proactive now. Casa Trendy, one of our friends, have just received $1.6 million for a halfway house. Let me tell you something. That's amazing. And they are so proactive. And I guarantee that will not be some rundown halfway house. That will be...
Nope.
That will be a really state-of-the-art facility, because that's what they do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's probably, you know, probably a year off. But let me tell you something. I constantly talk about Ann Dominguez, but she is so far ahead of the game on most of this. Another person I want to talk, real quick. I always talk about the police chief in Hornell, Ted. Let me tell you something. They had a bust recently in Hornell. They have of heroin. That was big. But he was on the news. Now, when he came on the news, you would think he would talk about the bust. You know what he did? No, he didn't. He actually offered the police station as a place where families or addicts could go to get help. He didn't even talk.
That's amazing.
He didn't even. I have. It's, if you ever get a chance, look up Hornell News and the news. He taught, and he actually, he set something up where he said, you could come in to my police station and we will get you a bed at a facility. It was the most, let me tell you, he didn't talk about the bust. He didn't talk about the people that were busted. He said, this is a problem. There's, I mean, I'm just, I cannot say enough about that police department down in Hornell. I mean, it's amazing. It's just, to me, truly, truly amazing.
People need to take a cue from them.
Yeah.
Well, first of all,
I didn't even notice.
Oh, I know. I just totally got distracted.
But I didn't notice this. Like,
Austin,
this is, what is
from
this?
Sober Evolution just posted on Instagram here for all of his followers to tune in and listen. So if you guys are listening right now, hey, what's up? Thank you for listening. We're going to bring Austin on in just a few moments here. We're going to play a couple songs in the meantime while we're getting it ready. So stay tuned. Thank you guys for tuning in.
Yeah, let's continue our Smoking It Up weekend with Lord John Mayer. Hey, and we're back.
We're back.
Carrie is like looking at me.
I got it. Before we bring on our guest, Austin, I have to share with you the moment that we just had as we went into the song.
Now,
start
I
the
always
break.
Like Carrie listen to the music prior to me putting it
well,
on.
He suggested this song, and I didn't know what it was going to be about. But it
not the
tied
Beatles
in.
Song.
No, not the Beatles song. The John Mayer song before that. But it kind of tied into the music that was playing on the show before ours, and then our talk about the controversy with marijuana or whatever. But that song starts off, and I'm like, no. This song sounds like it's encouraging.
No,
marijuana
we
use.
Weren't
so
encouraging.
We are not encouraging
we are
marijuana
not.
Use.
But
it
until I saw what Carrie's drinking today called Mellow Mood.
Oh, yeah. Well, not that mellow. But yeah, so I just wanted to put it out there for the record that song was not meant to encourage the use of marijuana because I was mortified when Joel started playing
okay,
that. But,
Carrie,
so anyways.
Yeah, Carrie doesn't get mortified with me.
No, we digress. But what's important is that we have Austin Cooper on the line right now. How's it going, Austin?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good. Better now that I got that off my chest.
Yeah, she had to say that. Yeah, and she'll be all the way for next hour. She'll be telling me that.
So, I guess.
Having me on.
What were you saying, hon?
I said I appreciate you guys having me on.
Oh, absolutely. So we're just gonna get right down into it. You know, we'll let you take it away. Just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing and what got you to the point of doing what you're doing right now.
All right. Yeah, I guess I'll just start off with my life story. I'll just summarize that and then get right into my sobriety over the past few years since 2013 and a little bit about what I've got going on with Sober Evolution too. So yeah, I grew up in Columbus, Ohio. I went to pretty good school systems. I do remember coming into high school, I was a very insecure and shy person. I had friends who all had girlfriends, and that was something that was big on my mind. It's just I didn't know how to, you know, break free of my comfort zone. That was a big, big issue for myself. I remember I was 15 years old and was invited over to a friend's house, and we had some drinks, and I remember that my guard was lowered down, and I didn't really have any issues with my comfort zone once I felt that first buzz. And so right from the get-go, I knew that's what I wanted to focus on, to lower down my guard.
Yeah.
And so drinking became an every weekend thing, and then started smoking marijuana, and then started using cocaine and pills whenever those were available, and I started attending the parties that I wanted to attend to and talk to the people that I wanted to talk to. And, you know, I thought it was pretty cool. The thing was, I was not focusing on some of the things that I should have been, such as school and work.
Right.
My priorities just became solely based around my drinking and using. And so that went up until college, and in college, of course, I realized that I didn't actually have to go to school. I had this freedom, and I, you know, took complete advantage of those freedoms right. for all the wrong reasons. I went to a community college in Columbus, and really I ended up just barely going to school and eventually ended up dropping out. You know, I would much prefer go day drinking with friends over focusing on school or studying.
Yeah.
Anything productive, it was just not on my list of priorities. Started using drugs more and more. And, you know, early on when I first started, I remember smoking marijuana back in high school. I wanted to figure out more ways of kind of going outside of my normal state of mind. I was kind of fascinated by drugs at that point, which, of course, in college did not go very well for me.
Right.
And I had a job. I ended up getting a job with an engineering firm, and really it was just through a connection through my dad. And I didn't want to do engineering. I wasn't interested in becoming an engineer, but, you know, I thought, why not? It sounds like a pretty cool job, and it's something to do in an office and, you know, hopefully try to save up some money. But the thing is with that, too, I was so focused on drinking and bars and partying that I'd spend each and every paycheck all on alcohol and drugs and cocaine and pills, whatever it was that would, you know, change my state of mind.
Right.
I ended up barely going to work anymore. Eventually, I started back up in college, or at least tried to. That lasted about half of a semester until I dropped out of that, too. And by that point, I was in a lot of debt, student loan debt. I wasn't able to afford my payments on that. I wasn't able to afford my rent. I could barely even afford the gasoline in my car or my food. And so I ended up having to move back in to my parents' house when I was 23, 24 years old. And I had a lot of friends who were graduating college and were getting good jobs. And really, that's kind of the point where my drinking and drug use turned from going out and having fun to covering up my pain and my guilt and my shame.
Right.
And that's when my usage became more than just weekends. It was during the week. Any time that I could get high or drunk, I would, because I was just felt so ashamed of myself for so many different reasons. I totaled multiple cars because of my drinking and drug use. I, you know, was extremely depressed, and I had never been to that low of a point in my life. I mean, I almost didn't really want to live anymore at that point. You know, I think it really was a blessing, though, that I moved back in with my parents, because they started noticing, obviously, that I was almost becoming a stranger in their lives. Mm-hmm. I would not associate with them. I would try to avoid them at all costs, even though I was living under their roof that they provided for me.
Right.
I really got to some ultimate lows, like I said. I started getting anxiety, and, you know, my health was just deteriorating. I couldn't be there for the people that I loved because I was always either drunk or high at night. And that alone was just a depressing moment.
Well, yeah.
And I remember it was in 2012, I saw someone on Facebook who actually used to be a drug dealer of mine. I saw he went out to rehab, he got help, and he started building his life. He started getting into real estate and got this real estate license. And I was like, man, my drug dealer, like, I thought he, yeah. I always thought of him as having a much worse problem than me, right. Of course. But I'm seeing this guy really build his life over time. And, you know, it just kind of sparked that, you know, idea in my head that, I wonder what I could accomplish if I didn't have, you know, the issues of alcohol and drugs really ruining my life and my motivation. I still had a problem, I guess, admitting my problem, and I still had a problem with being able, being comfortable with asking for help. You know, I thought only weak people at that time asked for help, but in reality, you know, I see it now as it takes so much strength, mm-hmm. and it's a strong person that asks for help. But like I said, my family really, they really were taking notice that, you know, I was coming home and I was going straight to my room to drink bottles of whiskey and rum and whatever it was that, you know, would make me basically pass out each night. And they didn't really know the extent of my drug use at that point until years later when I told them. But they noticed enough that they decided to give me an intervention. I remember I was at work. My boss, he was in on that as well, and said he was taking me to a meeting. We end up at a building, and it didn't seem like an engineering building, but he was keeping me in conversation, and I opened the door, and I saw my mom sitting there, and I knew immediately that that was an intervention, and immediately in my head, I knew, if I think about this too long, I'm going to second-guess myself, and I'm not going to go get help.
Right.
And so I had to make the decision right then and there that this is my time, this is the point where I'm going to change my life around, and this is going to be where all of the opportunities for me accomplishing my dreams and my goals is going to start. And so at that point, you know, it was, I've got to be done with alcohol. I've got to be willing to change my entire life. I've got to be willing to, you know, admit all of my problems and become completely 100% honest with myself.
Right.
And I walked in and I said, let's do this pretty much right off the bat. So we ended up, they ended up taking me to a drug treatment facility, and I stayed there for 21 days, and you know, it was definitely out of my comfort zone, but I decided to really open my mind up. And I remember from day one, someone told me, he's like, you know, the way that you're going to accomplish your goals and your dreams is if you pay close attention to the people who have had time and experience in life. Pay attention to the wisdom. And so really, I wrote all the notes that I possibly could in that time that I was in the drug treatment center, trying to soak up the wisdom that these people, these old-timers, were passing down to me.
Right.
And I noticed how much of a difference that made in my outlook in life. My philosophies were changing, and the way I walked, the way I talked, everything, you know, was changing because I knew that's what needed to happen for me to really make something of myself someday. And I took all of the wisdom from that, and really I've been able to apply it ever since. You know, I've noticed, I guess, the principles of success. That's what, you know, the big book and AA is really all about. You know, those are principles and practices mm-hmm. of succeeding, of course, mm-hmm. at staying sober in that case. But I've noticed that the principles of success, they're universal. And so I took basically the wisdom and knowledge that I learned from AA, and I learned to apply that in other aspects of my life as well. So right off the bat, I was, ironically, I always wanted to get my real estate license, and I knew that was going to be very, very difficult. I knew the test was going to be extremely hard. It was going to be the toughest thing I'd ever done. But, you know, instead of drinking and going out, I have to learn to replace that time with doing something productive. I was going to have to train and train my mind to do something that was going to build my life instead of what I was used to. I knew I was going to have to change, you know, who I was hanging out with, which was probably the hardest thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it all comes down to it, like, this is our lives,
right.
You know, it's not the opinions of others' lives, you know, it's
right.
our lives. And that is something that is just so important in the long run that I'm going to have to take everything very seriously. And if there's anything that's going to risk me drinking and using again, I've got to be able to cut that out.
Right.
Because if I decide to drink, because about 100% of the time that I've listened to people's stories that maybe they had a year, 5 years, 10 years, 30 years sober, and they think that they've got control, and they decide to even just have a sip of wine 1 month, Then the next month, they justify two sips of wine.
Right.
And then the next month, they're drinking a couple glasses of wine. And then every single time, they go back out and they end up in a worse place than where they were before. Yeah. And so I've got to understand that for the rest of my life, I cannot drink. I mean, no matter how much control I have in my life, you know, as far as, you know, whatever career and health goes, I will never be able to control alcohol or drugs. And so, you know, I just went in, like I said, to really build my life from that point. And I was able to get my real estate license. And like I said, it was the toughest thing I ever did. But I wasn't wasting my time going out partying or doing, you know, pointless things for my life. I was doing things that were productive. And, you know, over time, it just became natural to be productive in life and do things that were building my life. And, you know, I didn't do very well at being a real estate agent. I failed at it, but it was still exciting that I was able to accomplish something. I was able to help sell a couple of houses, and, you know, that alone was like, wow, I can really learn to do anything I want to do in life. So then I ended up starting an online marketing business, and I failed at that too, but it was still starting a business, and I learned so much from that. And I started actually reading books, which before I hated reading, hated
right.
it. But someone suggested a book called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And first off, the title turned me off because I'd always thought of, you know, rich or wealthy people as snobby people who were just handed the silver spoon. But what that personal development book showed me was that it showed me these habits that people had, these character habits. And these really good quality habits. And I started following those. And even within just a few weeks, I started noticing these significant changes in who I am. And I started noticing my productivity levels go up even further. So I just kept picking up personal development book after personal development book. And through that, I learned so much about myself that, you know, come a year ago today, basically, I came up with the idea for Sober Evolution, and all of it was just because I had learned so much about myself, what I was good at and what I enjoyed doing. And so I just started this thing called Sober Evolution on Instagram. And I just wanted to be able to kind of give back the wisdom and the knowledge and the mindset that I had been learning from all these books and throughout my sobriety, from the wisdom I was gaining from these people, these new people I was associating with, from business owners and other people who are just, you know, enjoying life. And so I started making these memes, if you will, or writing these quotes down and posting that on Instagram.
Yep.
And really, it got really big, really fast. I wasn't
That's how I found you initially about a year ago was through Instagram.
Yeah, I know. It's been such an amazing ride because I've been able to link up with people like yourself who are like-minded and goal-oriented. And, you know, I've been able to see people respond to some of the mindset posts that I say. And they're like, wow, I've never really thought of it that way. And they're like, this is going to completely change the course of my life. And really, you know, those were the things that changed the course of my life, those mindsets. And, you know, so it's just amazing to see it really help people out. So I decided to, you know, turn Sober Evolution into a business. And, you know, initially I was just like selling shirts. And the reason why I wanted to do that is because kind of like how I had that spark a couple of years ago that maybe I needed to admit my problems and maybe that I needed to get help for myself from seeing that person be open about their sobriety on Facebook. I was like, what a cool way of expressing, you know, yourself and being okay with the fact that, you know, you got help or you needed help for alcoholism or drug addiction. So I started selling these t-shirts that are sober hearts. It's a heart with the word sober in it. That's it. But people started buying those from all around the country, and the feedback that I started getting was incredible. You know, all of those people, you know, I consider them friends who have bought them and they've worn them, you know, out and about, whatever, to a mall or to, you know, sobriety events or concerts or whatever. And I always hear these amazing things that people walking by would comment on them in good ways. But really, you never know who's going to walk by and who needs to see someone be proud about their being sober.
Right.
You know, I mean, one of the big reasons why I started Sober Evolution was because I remember seeing these people enjoying life in sobriety. I'm like, man, that is so cool. Like, it would be awesome if I could spread that in some way, shape, or form and show that, you know, how cool it is to be sober. How cool is it to, you know, not, or to be able to say no to something that you've been so used to doing for so long.
Right.
I mean, it takes such strength to say no to using drugs or alcohol when you know you've got a problem. And so to me now, that is cool. It's not going out and, you know, partying and doing cocaine and being life at a party.
Right.
What's cool is getting your act together and, you know, really focusing on building your life and accomplishing amazing goals. So, yeah, and recently I partnered up with a friend of mine, and we built a new website with Sober Evolution. And, you know, we've got even more products, but on top of that, we're really helping people find the treatment that they need. I know a big issue is, you know, one, people don't know where to look to find the treatment that they need. And, you know, sometimes they'll just find the first place that, you know, they find on the internet and go to that one, and maybe it's not the right spot
right.
for them. And
yeah.
So one of the things we do is try to start relationships with these different treatment centers so that we know what they're all about. And then when someone comes to us for help, you know, we can ask them certain questions and find out, you know, I mean, who knows if they're, you know, hardcore into Christianity and they want to be surrounded by other people who are Christians or maybe holistic or spiritual or neither, you know?
Right.
And so we really just want to help people find what they need. On top of that, I mean, we partnered up with Lab Medical Group, which is an incredible concierge drug testing company. And so now we're able to help give back to the treatment centers, help them save time and money, and also help the treatment centers that we partner up with Lab Medical Group, you know, fill the beds that they need, of course, because we're forming this relationship with them and we know all about their treatment center. And so we're able to direct the people who need their treatment center to them. So we've got a lot going on, but it's just, you know, this whole, ever since my sober date is April 10th, 2013, ever since then, it's just been, how can I build my life, you know? And it's been tough, but at the same time, it's been exciting. And I've been able to accomplish so many things, and I'm not trying to toot my own horn or anything, but what I'm trying to say is that, you know, we all have this ability to learn new things and grow.
Right.
But we just have to be willing to become completely honest with ourselves about everything.
Absolutely.
And once we do that, we're really putting down this foundation for to build our lives upon.
It's funny.
And there's so many resources out there to help us. I mean, you know, you can go down the street to a library and it's filled with all the information in the world. And so if you want to become an expert in something, the information's available to you for free.
Right.
You know, and I never thought of things that way until after getting sober and realizing, you know, I've got all this extra time now. Let's see what I can do and accomplish.
Yeah.
You know, we don't really, I don't want to be later in life and think back, you know, to my life and think that I just lived within the opinions of and expectations of others instead of a life true to myself. You know, I've always had big dreams and goals. I think everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all out there for us to accomplish. And there's people who are going to help you along the way. And, you know, I know the friend thing is a big issue for a lot of people, just like it was for me. But I had to look at my life and look at the people I was surrounding myself with. Are they helping me build my life? Are they encouraging me? Are they challenging me? Are they mentors?
Right.
Or are we always talking about the past and, you know, am I surrounded by the things I don't need to be surrounded by, drugs and alcohol? You know, and I had to really, things, I had to become fully honest with that. You know, the people I was surrounding myself weren't helping me. You know, maybe they supported me a little bit in my sobriety, which is awesome.
Right.
But I needed people who were, you know, going to be motivated, and I was going to need to surround myself with, you know, entrepreneurs or inspired people. People were going to help me out as I was going to help them out. And so, you know, it feels lonely at first, but the thing is, once you start building your life and finding out more about yourself, you just tend to naturally attract the right people in your life. And I can say today that the friendships I have are incredible. And it's, you know, it came over time. And I have self-awareness now. And so that's what I try to really teach people. I think I forgot to even mention the fact that I help, you know, coach people. And those are all part of my teachings is, you know, is the association thing and the knowledge, the wisdom, the practices, the principles, everything to really help people build their lives. You know, that's a big focus of mine.
Well, yeah, and I can see how you'd be successful at that. I mean, I've really enjoyed listening to you, and I wanted to go back to one thing you said. You know, you're like, I don't mean to toot my own horn, so to speak. And I think that it's important because obviously we all know the dark side of addiction or drug and alcohol use, and far too often people just focus on that.
Right.
And I think it's important to hear people like you, and that's one of the reasons that we do Sober Life Radio, is to spread that word, you know, that there are good things that can happen. You know, we can talk about the downside all day long, but let's talk about, you know, how you are able to achieve your goals, you know, things beyond your wildest dreams. You know, I follow you, I see what you're up to, and it's inspiring, you know, so toot your own horn, away.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was just talking with someone on the phone yesterday, and she brought up a really good point that really was where I was at one point in my life, too, is that, like, I was afraid to pat myself on the back. I just wanted to pat other people on the back and support them. But it is so important for us to help ourselves first. Otherwise, we're not really truly helping anybody else.
Exactly.
And it's okay to pat yourself on the back. Like, set these little goals and big goals in life and start knocking those out. It's okay to treat yourself. It's like, you know, you start realizing that yeah, you are pretty cool. Like, it is cool that you accomplished that goal. Like, and that's okay to say to yourself, like, good job. Like, you're kicking butt here. You know, keep it up. It's good to encourage yourself. And I think it's just so important to focus on building yourself. You know, everything else follows. I know everybody has, you know, goals and dreams of, you know, having a family and having a house. But the thing is, those are just the things that follow when you're really building yourself and who you are.
Right.
You know, so I think that should be the most important goal, at least in my life. It has been that. My health, I think fitness is huge.
Oh,
I didn't mention that, but like 2014, I was like, you know what? I've never won anything athletic in my life, but it would be pretty cool if I could say I won a trophy in something. And so 2014, I started training, doing two-a-days. I started doing like Tough Mudders, Savage Race, like all that crazy, those crazy obstacle races. And then eventually I signed up for a pretty big 5-mile race where people all over the country, these athletes come in. I was like, I've trained so hard, I'm going to run my heart out here. And I ended up winning third place.
That's awesome.
That's great.
And winning a trophy. And it was like, wow, like, you know, it was a good 8 months of pure training.
Yeah.
But right there shows you what delayed gratification is. You know, you put in a little bit more and more each and every day.
Right.
And over a period of time, incredible things can happen. And I think that was a big issue for a lot of people, is understanding delayed gratification.
Oh,
we want things now, now, now.
Right.
But it's like when you look at fitness, you know, things come over time. It just takes patience and hard work.
Yep.
So,
did anyone ever say you look like Twitch? You know, the
Twitch. There's a celebrity. I'm looking at your picture right now. Yeah, so I've got your picture pulled up. And there's a guy named Twitch that we've had perform for us and whatnot. And you guys are very similar.
Yeah, very similar. He's a, you know, he's a major label recorder. But yeah, you look almost just like him. I was like, holy cow.
I'll have to look him up.
The before and after pictures of you are fantastic, by the way, because every once in a while you'll drop like a before and after. And, you know, again, I know it was a gradual progression, but you can really see it in you and, you know, anybody when they get clean and sober and are actually living a healthier life. It just radiates from them. And that's very evident with you.
Now, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, I've got a website, which is sober-evolution.com.
Okay.
I always, you know, all over that website, there's points where you can easily contact me. I've got my email address is thesoberevolution@gmail.com. So thesoberevolution@gmail.com. I'm always available on my Instagram, which is @soberevolution. I'm very accessible. I love talking to people. So, you know, don't be afraid to send a message or anything over to me, because I'd love to hear from you. And I love one of the cool things about the website is I love posting people's stories on there, because they're so inspiring. And, you know, you never know who's going to be able to relate to what story. And so we've got a bunch of stories on our new blog. And so definitely go check those out. If you've got one, I would love to post it up, because you never know whose life you can really change with your personal story. I think that's what's amazing about sobriety in our lives, is that we can use our past, you know, the things that we once thought were so negative, as tools to really helping other people and saving other people's lives. So I definitely encourage that.
Absolutely. And we're about to wrap up right now, but what I'll do is once we convert this broadcast to a podcast, I will post it and I will tag you in it and put links up, and even more people will get to hear your message.
So,
awesome. Well,
thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you guys so much.
Have a good weekend, okay?
All right, you too. We'll talk soon.
All right, take care.
Hi, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
A nice guy.
Yeah, he was. Like I said, I'll post some links and whatnot. Yeah. Definitely check him out. I mean,
I mean, he has his page is pretty in depth. So
yeah, but check it out.
So everybody have a good week.
Yes,
you too. I'm Carrie's will be happy because the podcast never has the music. I love you, Carrie.
Love you too, Joel.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
You too.